Welcome to Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop, where you'll find the unique, the bizarre, and sometimes the haunted. Feel free to look around, peruse the items, and never fear, there's nothing here that bites. Hard anyway. Hello there, and welcome back to Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop. I am your shopkeeper, Chris Baker, and today an interesting thing I'd like to show you. If you'll follow me over here to this section of the shop where we keep all of our items that relate to Greek mythology. And here in the centerpiece on the wall is an ancient map of Greece. And if you'll notice this mountainous region here in the southern portion of Greece, this is known as Arcadia, part of the Peloponnese. And Arcadia is where we get the term Arcadian. Now, if you look at it as a person, a noun, it would be someone who lives a simple, quiet life. If you're looking at as more of a descriptor, it would be an idyllic or pastoral place or thing, something that is innocent, simple, and untroubled. And that may or may not relate to our subject of today's episode of Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop, so let's pull out the kinetoscope and take a look at the new film, Arcadian. So if you haven't listened to our last episode, the one we did on Monday about the new movie Sting, I had a really interesting thing happen. The two movies I wanted to watch, the two movies that were really the only thing coming out to talk about on the podcast this past weekend, were Sting and Arcadian. And neither one of them were playing in the movie theater that I usually go to in my hometown. So I had to travel up to Erie, Pennsylvania. Not a far trip. I mean, it's like 35, 40 minutes away. But I had to go up there and go to a different movie theater to watch both these movies. And I had to time it out. So, okay, I watch this one at this time. Then I've got a little bit of a layover. I can get myself something to eat. And then I'm going to watch this movie at this time while my wife went and did shopping. And it all worked out fine. And I'm really glad I got to watch both of these movies, because it was an instant where two movies really kind of, not blew me away, but I have to admit that I really loved both of these movies, Sting and Arcadian. I thought both movies were done really well. They were movies that had a simple concept and they told it simply. Not in a bad way, but in a non-complicated way. And I think some of the best horror movies are those with the least complicated ideas and premises, and they did that. This could have got really complicated, but it didn't. Writer Michael Nylon, I believe he works with Nicolas Cage somehow, publicist or something to that effect, but he's worked with Nicolas Cage. He's written at least one or two other things that Nicolas Cage has been in, but excellent screenwriter from this. I really haven't looked at his filmography to see what else he's written. I've probably seen other things, but just judging by this, I was really impressed with his ability to write a very succinct and very compelling story that took aspects of a family dynamic. And I think you get that same thing in Sting that we talked about on Monday. You get a really good family dynamic story. This is just a different sort of family dynamic. And it was really interesting, very compelling, and it gave you characters that you care about. And I think that's one of the most important things in any film, but especially horror. When something's bad is going to happen to somebody, I either really want them to die or I really want them to make it through. And I have to care one way or the other. I have to care about this character or I have to hate this character. And if I'm supposed to care about this character, you can't just manufacture that feeling. You gotta earn that feeling. And I thought they really did earn that feeling with these characters through the writing. And of course, Ben Brewer was the director of this. I thought he did a really good job telling this story, because it's a small cast. Even beyond the number of people, the actual number of people in the cast list, you only really get to spend any significant time with three, maybe four of them. And to be able to do as much as they did with such a limited cast really spoke to the directing, spoke to the writing, spoke to the acting, and it all really came together. On top of the fact that they had really good effects and had some really creepy freaking characters that that I quite enjoyed on many different levels, and we'll talk about that as we get into some spoiler territory. But yeah, I can't go on any further without talking spoilers. So if you haven't watched this movie, go watch Arcadian. It's in theaters now. It's one of those movies where studios need to understand. They need to have a message sent to them that these little indie films, and this is a Shudder-produced film, so you'll get it on Shudder eventually if you've got that streaming service, but I encourage you to go watch it in the theaters and let the studios know that movies like this, movies like Sting, that are smaller budget, but they have artists who are really trying to make something special, and they do make something special, that these movies are viable options for making money as well. And so go support this movie in the theater, and then come back and listen to my thoughts on it. Otherwise, if you've seen it or you don't care about spoilers one way or the other, we're going to head on into some spoiler territory. So Arcadian is a survival horror story, much like you would get with any sort of post-apocalyptic storytelling, whether it be zombie apocalypse, whether it be nuclear holocaust, whether it be this sort of apocalypse or that sort of apocalypse. This was an interesting type of apocalypse that it's almost a pollution apocalypse. And they don't really get into any of the nuts or bolts of what actually happened, just that it happened. We're thrust into what feels like the beginning of the end of this. And Nicolas Cage, I think they may have done a little de-aging somehow, whether it been practically or digitally. But you see a 15 years younger Nicolas Cage leaving someplace. You see a body lying on the floor from like the waist down. He's got a backpack, and we see him running through the streets trying to get away from this city, and he comes across like a tunnel, and the shopping cart tipped over with these two babies laying on the ground. They've been abandoned, or something happened to the caregiver or the parents, whoever, and he scoops up these two babies and decides he's going to take care of them. Then 15 years later, we got Nicolas Cage and these two young boys living in what seems to be a very Arcadian location. It's a farmhouse out in the country. It's very green and lush, and they're living a simple life. And it very much plays into the title Arcadian, but that really is kind of a false flag because their world is maybe on the outside looks idyllic and peaceful and pastoral, but in all actuality, they're living in fear. They're living in constant fear of the night. And that's one of the things I heard a lot of people comparing this to is A Quiet Place or the Joel Edgerton movie, It Comes at Night. I can see that from an apocalyptic standpoint with creatures. I could see where you would make A Quiet Place comparisons, although the creatures are completely different. Maybe on a base level, they're similar, but for all intents and purposes, these are different types of creatures. One feels more like man-made, the other is an alien. But again, much like Sting, I thought they did a really good job of getting us into this and giving us just enough information to understand, like in very rudimentary ways, what's going on. You have some scenes where some of the kids are talking or somebody's reading something, and it's a lot of speculation on what happened. A lot of what they read and said seems to be where pollution, something happened with pollution. And you kind of start putting two and two together in your mind. Okay, pollution has run rampant. Nature essentially fights back, and these creatures are created as a result of our pollution, and then these creatures start essentially destroying mankind. It's almost like nature created antibodies to take out the virus, and humanity is the virus. Granted, nothing's ever confirmed. They don't go into great detail. You get a couple mentions, and then it just kind of lets your mind drift and wonder what actually happened. And I thought that was neat. And then there were some things that they talked about, the two kids, Thomas and Charlotte. Oddly enough, both of these movies I saw this weekend had a Charlotte character, but Thomas and Charlotte talking about some of the speculation as to what happened. They make up stories as to why things happened, and it really kind of sends up some red herrings. One of the things, somebody mentioned werewolves, or people turned into wolves and ran off and joined nature. And I know from watching the trailer, to see like these glimpses of these creatures, you saw some like a hairy back. I almost wondered if it was some sort of werewolf type creature that we were dealing with. I couldn't have been more off base with that. But as they're saying that, it's relatively towards the end of the first act of the story, I thought, oh yeah, it is werewolves. And I, like I said, I couldn't have been more wrong. But you have this really interesting family dynamic with Nicolas Cage as Paul. He's this kind of makeshift father for these two boys, Joseph and Thomas. And Nicolas Cage is a fantastic actor. I'm not going to go in and tout all of his wonderful things that he's done and the career that he's chosen. But the two young men who play his adopted sons, Joseph and Thomas. You have Jaden Martell, who plays Joseph. He was, of course, young Bill in It. I didn't care for the movies, Chapter 1 and Chapter 2, but I thought he, and I thought all the kids did a really good job of playing younger versions. I think the whole cast of those movies was done really well. But Jaden Martell played him, played the lead in Mr. Harrigan's Phone on Netflix. He's done a ton of stuff recently and is a really good young actor. I really am impressed with this kid because every role he takes, it feels like a different character. It doesn't feel like the same actor playing each character. And he's kind of the kid that's afraid to go out and venture out. So he stays at home with his books and tinkering with his machines. And he's kind of the smart one. You have Maxwell Jenkins, who plays Thomas. And he is, Maxwell Jenkins played Will Robinson in the Netflix series Lost in Space. I really enjoyed him in that role. He's a little bit older now and he plays Thomas, and he's kind of the golden child. He's the kind of kid who is athletic and he's, you know, running off to meet a girl at the next farm over, and he's not afraid to go out and he's not afraid to wait till the last minute to where he's coming home just before dark. You know, he's very brave, whereas Joseph is a little more timid, and you have that very interesting sibling rivalry there, and the father trying to keep peace between two teenage boys that always seem to be at each other's throat. And you really get an interesting story about what it means to be family. Here you've got this guy who just took in these two babies and became a father, whether he wanted to or not. I suppose he didn't have to, but it showed his character that he took in these two boys as babies and raised them as his own, and what it means to be a dad, and the sacrifice he makes at the end of this movie to make sure that his kids can live on was a lot to say about what it means to be a father. Not necessarily blood, it's about love, and it's about caring, and it's about being that caretaker, and when it's time to let them go and to be adults on their own, doing that. I thought that was interesting. You have Joseph and Thomas, two brothers. I don't know if they're actual siblings. I mean, he found these two babies. I don't know if they were sibling babies or if they were two babies from different, but I'm assuming they're brothers, twin brothers, and the relationship between them, the two different, you know, the smart bookworm versus the athletic ladies man jock, and their constant quibbling and bickering. And when it seems like they're so different that they can't coexist together, Thomas realizes that he loves his brother. And even though they quibble and argue and they don't get along all the time, he's not going to leave his brother behind. And it's a really interesting family dynamic story that I really loved. And again, much like Sting, it made me care about these characters and care about what happened to them. So when Paul makes that sacrifice there at the end of the movie so that his boys can survive, it made it all the more powerful. And it made the anguish of those boys letting him make that sacrifice all the more traumatic and all the more gut-wrenching. Now, the one thing that I did feel that the trailer kind of wrecked for this movie is that you have these creatures. They come out at night and they try to get in and they try to get at you. And if you keep everything locked up, they're not so strong that they're going to break down your door and rip you apart. They have to be able to get in. And if you keep things locked up tight, you're relatively safe. Well, the story goes on and you have this, what could have been a really cool mystery of what these creatures are doing. They're starting to do things different. They're starting to do interesting things that they haven't done before. And it all culminates with them essentially digging underground, burrowing underground, tunnels underground to come up through the floorboards of these houses. And that would have been a really interesting mystery that could have been paid off with a, oh shit moment, but it was wrecked by the trailer. I mean, they come right out and say in the trailer that, oh, they're starting to come up through the floors. To me, it just felt like a missed opportunity for this movie to have like some sort of mystery. Because you don't have the mystery of where these things come from and what they are. And I'm okay with that. You don't need to have the science explained, or you don't need to explain why these creatures came about, just that it probably had to do something with pollution and it is nature kind of trying to course correct. That's all you really need to know. So you really didn't have a mystery there. It just was. And this would have provided an interesting mystery, like a sense of what are they doing? Why are they doing this? They've never done this before. And then all of a sudden, bam, you get a realization of what they're doing before they actually burst through the floors. And that could have been a shocking moment. But there again, the trailer wrecked that moment. Now, these creatures, I thought, were kind of cool. I know some people said they felt derivative of the aliens from A Quiet Place. I could see on a base level how that could be true, how you could think that. But if you look at these creatures, and you don't really get a good look at, I mean, this is a time in a post-apocalyptic history where there's not any electricity. So everything is by firelight or by lantern light or flashlight. But I don't even know if they had flashlights. Maybe I'm thinking of Sting, but you don't have a lot of light. So everything is lit naturally. And so you don't get a lot of really good looks at these creatures. You get a little bit of a good look when Joseph captures one of them. But even still, they move quick enough and hiding behind things that you never really get a good look until the end. And I thought that was one of the things they did really well, is they spent most of the time, anytime you saw this creature, it was low light and you just got glimpses of it, or it run under the bed and was hiding behind things, and you never got a really fully good look at it until the end when they made the big reveal during the climax of that third act. And I think that was really smart. That was one of the good things that Sting did, is that they kept the giant spider kind of, as it got bigger, they kept it in the shadows or just little glimpses or POV shots, and didn't really make the big reveal until they had to. And I think that was a smart thing to do with this, because once you finally got the reveal, and even still, you don't get a terribly good look at it, and you're spending almost all your time trying to figure out what it is you're even looking at. To me, these creatures felt like a cross between the trolls from the original Willow movie, a cross between the trolls from Willow, Velociraptor, and the critters from the movie Critters. It kind of felt like an amalgamation of all three of those characters. There may be something else in there that I'm not seeing, but I think they did these characters really well. The creature design was eerie and creepy, and I've seen some stills of these creatures kind of enhanced, had the brightness turned up so you can see things a little better, and they're really disgusting, and that really lends itself to the idea that these creatures are a creature created by nature as a way to fight back against humanity, and it feels, these creatures feel like a product of pollution, and they're disgusting looking and hairy, and they almost have like a shape-shifting dynamic to them. There's that one really creepy scene where Joseph sets the trap and the little portal gets opened up and this arm stretches through, but then the arm, almost like it starts to unfold, and then this claw, it stretches this claw out, and the claw just keeps getting longer and longer, trying to get close to Joseph. And yeah, it had almost like a shape-shifting feel. There were other scenes where I really want to watch this movie again once it comes out on Shudder so I can re-look at what I'm and contextualize what I actually saw. But the creature design was really creepy. It had a lot of things going for it that just were bizarre and otherworldly and felt like some sort of natural evolution that was spearheaded by pollution to wipe out the creators of pollution. It really, without saying that, it felt like that in the design of this creature. And the one thing, you know, this is unlike Sting that we talked about on Monday's episode, which had a little bit of a camp, a little bit of a cheekiness and a cheesiness to it. It felt kind of a throwback to some of those giant creature movies from the B movies of the 50s and early 60s. It had that little bit of cheesiness to it. This felt a little more dramatic, a little more of a dramatic story and a, I don't want to say an artistic horror story, because the creatures were very bizarre and kind of wild looking and not the elevated horror creature that one might expect from an art house horror film. But the one thing that these creatures did that did seem kind of silly, but I was like, at this point, I was all in on this, is they did this thing, and that's part of the reason why I equate this to Critters. You know how in Critters, I don't know if they did it in the first Critters, but at least in the second, maybe the third one, they started doing that thing where all the critters kind of ball up into this giant ball and start rolling towards people. They do something like this, where these creatures kind of link up and almost make this wheel and start rolling. There's some sort of creature in the Return to Oz that did that as well. I can't remember specifically, but I want to say there was something like that in Return to Oz. But yeah, these creatures kind of wheel up and make this spinning wheel of death, and then that flaming wheel of death towards the end after the big explosion was kind of silly but horrifying all at the same time. It was really, like I said, it felt otherworldly. Like, these are a creature that they're not dumb. It may take them a while to figure things out, but they are of an intelligence and they figure out how to do things. When they can't get in the door the regular way, they finally figure out how to tunnel under houses and come up underneath. They've found a way to, when they're chasing something, we can do it faster than on our feet if we make this big wheel and roll after people. I don't know. I mean, if you're not getting what I'm putting down with how they're doing this, just think of like acrobats at a circus. And they link up hands to feet and make a wheel and start rolling. It's kind of like that. And I think that's what I loved about these creatures the most, is that it was a lot of practical. There were a lot of scenes where it was somebody in a suit moving around. There were scenes where it was an amalgamation of both. It was a practical person in a suit and CG enhancing that. There were some moments where it was complete CG. They did a really good job with creating these creatures both practically and through CG, through digital, much like they did with the spider in Sting. And again, these movies, to me, felt like they went hand in hand because they both had the same amount of care put into creating the creature as it was of creating the drama on the screen. But Ben Brewer, if you're not familiar with him, he did VFX. He's a VFX guy. He did VFX on Everything Everywhere All at Once, which a fantastic movie, especially the VFX in that. But he is a VFX guy, so it really, you could tell that a lot of care went into creating these creatures. And that, I think, is one of the things that I enjoyed most about this, was the uniqueness of the creatures while still feeling a bit familiar. Like, I've seen variations of this creature, but I've never seen it done like this. And the way the creatures are portrayed on the screen as being not only a terrifying looking thing, but an intelligent being that can figure out how to get around the obstacles you put in its way to stop it. And ultimately, to stop them, they had to blow up their freaking house. It was heartbreaking when Nicolas Cage's character, Paul, kind of locks the kids in this bedroom and he's holding off the creatures to give them time to get inside of this freezer. And that scene where the house blows up and these kids, they have the camera inside of this freezer and you see the lid, they're trying to keep the lid down, but it keeps popping up and bits of flame shoot in and it closes and it pops up and bits of flame shoot in. It was a really interesting shot that I don't know as if I've seen anything like that I can think of as far as a shot in the midst of an explosion like that. It was really horrific to watch, to put yourself in that position where you're in the middle of this explosion and you're not sure if you're going to live or die. And every time a shot of flame bursts in, you're wondering if that's okay, this is the end. It really puts you in the middle of the terror that these three young kids, Joseph, Thomas, and Charlotte are in. And that really made for a very tense climax. And much like Sting, I think that's one of the things this movie did particularly well is create tension. You had so many instances, that scene where Joseph sets the trap, the scene where Thomas is in this like crevasse in the earth in this almost cave area and the creatures are on the other side of this rock wall and Paul and him are trying to get out of there once Paul comes to rescue him. And just a lot of tension. That scene where the creatures, before they burst through Paul, Thomas, and Joseph's house, the Rose family, where Charlotte comes from, they attack their house, and that whole situation and that whole scene was terrifying. And to see the calculation that these creatures had, that they were of a particular intelligence, and that just made these creatures all the more formidable. They just weren't ravenous animals looking to kill you. They were calculating animals that were looking to systematically take out humanity. But all in all, I thought this was a really good movie. I couldn't decide which one I wanted to talk about first, why I did Sting on Monday's episode and Arcadian on Thursday's episode. I think I've heard more about Sting, so I decided to do that Monday, but I really loved both of these movies the same. I thought both of them really did a good job of creating creature features that didn't lack in human element and human drama that made you care about the people that you should be afraid for. I think Sting was a little more campy horror, where I thought this felt a little more dramatic and cinematic horror. I think this was the more cinematic of the movies, but I think both of them were fantastic horror films that had more scares than I thought I was going to get out of either one of these, and more frights and more tension. And I really can't wait to see both of these movies again. I'm not sure when Sting's going to come out to streaming or where it's going to end up, but Arcadian is going to be a Shudder film, because this was a Shudder production. So they will be putting this on Shudder and AMC sometime, I would think, in the not too distant future. If not by the end of summer, I would think this fall we'll probably see that come out on Shudder. And I'm so excited to get a chance to watch this movie again, much like Sting, because I thought both of these movies, just two of the best movies so far this year when it comes to horror. You had this, you have Late Night with the Devil, I thought was a really good one. Might be a couple others offhand, but these two definitely are in my top five as of right now. We'll see how it pans out by the end of the year, but I really love this movie. The cast was fantastic. Nicolas Cage is incomparable, and you always love to see him show up in movies because he brings it every time. You never see a Nicolas Cage performance where he phones it in. To see some really good young actors like Jaden Martell and Maxwell Jenkins, the young actress that plays Charlotte, she doesn't get a lot of screen time, but what she does, she makes it count. Sadie Sovereall, I believe is her name. I don't really know a lot about her. I know she was in that movie Saltburn, did a really good job in that. All three of these young actors, really excited to see where their careers go, because I think all three of them have wonderful careers ahead of them. And that the end of the movie where they just drive off in that golf cart looking thing and just drive off, not to the horizon, but to as far as you can see in the tree line. And you just, you know, you wonder where these kids are going to go from here. I don't know if they're going to make a sequel to this. They're, again, like Sting. I think they set it up for a sequel. I mean, the possibility of a sequel. They left it open-ended enough that you know the story goes on. I don't think we need to see it. But if we do, I'd be interested to see where they go with this story and with these characters. They're, again, not advocating that, but that was how compelling these characters and this story was, is that once it's fade to black and roll credits, I'm wondering what happened to these kids afterwards. Nicolas Cage's Paul taught these boys well. I think they're going to be all right. I think they're going to be survivors. So, excellent movie, Arcadian. Again, much like Sting, go check this out in the movie theater if you haven't, because you've got to show these sort of independent movies, these independent horror films, that that you support them and show the studios that we want more stuff like this. You know, sequels and reboots and remakes, those are all good and well. The big studio productions of, you know, stuff like Blumhouse that just seem... You know, that's not a knock against Blumhouse. I love a lot of Blumhouse stuff, but a lot of Blumhouse stuff is fairly cookie cutter these days. Not that I don't enjoy that from time to time, but I want to see some more stuff like Arcadian and Sting and less of the cookie cutter stuff. I want to see people doing interesting things, doing different things. Yeah, this movie may have been a little bit derivative of some other things, but it did... it took an idea, a generic idea that other movies have done, and did that generic idea a little bit differently and did it in a very enjoyable way. So go check out Arcadian in theaters. If not, it is going to be on Shudder, and I, for one, can't wait to watch it again once it does. So I want to thank everybody for listening to my thoughts on Arcadian. You can check it out now, and always check out what's going on with Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop on our Facebook page and our Instagram page. We're always posting about horror, fantasy, and science fiction, as well as the latest episodes and what we've got going on with the podcast. Wherever you're listening to this podcast, like, follow, subscribe to it. That way you can stay on top of all the latest drops and all the latest episodes. And please share this podcast with anyone that you know that loves horror, fantasy, and science fiction, as well as leaving those reviews. 5 stars would be awesome, but whatever review you leave, we do appreciate that, and we do thank you for your feedback. So until next time.
Thank you for visiting Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop. We hope that you found something to your liking and visit the shop again soon. But even though you may come back, you never really get to leave Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop.